From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made 2 weeks ago when Georgia Governor Brian Kemp sued the city of Atlanta to prevent it from enforcing a mask-wearing mandate. According to the Washington Post, their lawsuit alleges that Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms of Atlanta, quote, lacked the authority to implement a mask requirement and that she must obey the governor's executive orders, including one that explicitly bans municipalities from enacting their own face covering ordinances, end quote. It's not the first time Governor Kemp has tried to ban parts of that state from issuing pandemic-related restrictions, and cities have defied his orders, with many passing mask-wearing requirements. This comes as an increasing number of states, 30 at the latest count, are now mandating people wear face coverings in public. While their specific policies vary, of course, many include requiring masks on public transit, in indoor public spaces like stores or restaurants, and outdoors when physical distancing is not possible. New York is one of those states. Since April, masks are required when people are outside their own homes and cannot maintain 6 feet of distance from one another. As reported by our colleague Brett Dahlberg, that rule has two exemptions: children under the age of two and people who cannot medically tolerate a face covering. Doctors say the latter exemption has posed problems due to the lack of clarity. What medical conditions make an exemption possible? How are businesses and communities enforcing mask mandates for those who can wear them? How is Monroe County doing when it comes to mask etiquette? What's the state of progress and tolerance and acceptance and adoption here? Our guest this hour will discuss this issue from a variety of angles, and I do want to hear from listeners this hour. What have you experienced in public and stores? Do you have questions about the rules and who's enforcing and who's not? Let's bring in our guest this hour. Monroe County's Deputy Commissioner of Public Health is Dr. Maria Elena Velez de Brown. And Dr. Velez de Brown, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Also with us is a professor of history and health policy at the University of Rochester, Dr. Michal Raz. Dr. Raz, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
And Molly Hartley is the co-owner of Scratch Bake Shop. And Molly, I have to say, we reached out to you because when we asked our listeners on various platforms who's doing a good job with this stuff, they said Scratch Bake Shop is one of the ones that came to the top of the list. So that's why you're here. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'm very, very happy to hear that. Thank you so much for thinking of us and including us today.
You got it. Well, there's a lot to talk about from a business perspective, too. Let me start by asking the Monroe County Deputy Commissioner of Public Health, Dr. Velez de Brown, how do you think we're doing so far? I mean, we're coming up to August now. Are we in a groove with masking, generally speaking? Do you feel that public adoption is pretty strong? How are we doing?
I think in general, we're doing pretty well here. Our numbers of new cases every day have been dropping, and I think that has a lot to do with certainly the work that our department is doing to do contact tracing and tell folks when they're at high risk, but we cannot discount the significant impact that it has had, that our community has really banded together and followed the recommendations of staying home, certainly initially when all non-critical or essential trips were discouraged, and also adopting the use of face coverings when you have to be out to do required things like go see your physician or go do groceries, things like that. And so that has had quite a significant impact in helping protect our entire community. So I have been very pleased that the majority of our community has banded together and has really taken up that mandate.
Have there been complaints?
Oh, there's always complaints. certainly. We do sometimes run into some folks who question, don't want to use a mask. A majority of our phone calls, for example, to community members have been positive, but we have had some cases of folks flat out telling some of our staff that they don't intend to either wear masks or follow their orders. Those are few and far between. And certainly since the New York State Department of Health created the website where folks can essentially tattletale on their neighbors or on businesses, we have had some reports come through of places where, you know, the mask enforcement is not being respected.
And so when you get that kind of a complaint, what's your process? I mean, my guess is you want everyone to comply. You don't want to go rattle any cages, mm-hmm. but at the same time, you've got to try to make sure that the people are doing what they're supposed to be doing. What's the process when you get a complaint?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So when we receive any of those kind of formal complaints, we certainly will reach out to the owners of the businesses. If it's a restaurant, you know, we have our inspectors that have longstanding relationships. And it's not, it's never intended to be punitive. It's much more educational. Hey, owner of, you know, this restaurant, we received this complaint. Can you tell us what your process is? Let us educate you about the requirements, about spacing of tables initially when it was only allowing food to be served out of doors, explaining that, yes, masks for servers, for people who are waiting to be seated are expected to be worn. Certainly highlighting things that, you know, folks tend to forget. The mask should cover your nose and your mouth, not just kind of hang around your mouth and your chin, things like that. So it's much more, our intention has been much more to educate folks and partner with them rather than try to be punitive. We have not yet had to revoke any permits for serving food. So because most of the time, once folks hear from us and see that we're trying to partner with folks and just protect the community, you know, who doesn't want to be a good neighbor? Nobody wants people to get sick and die from this illness if it can be minimized or prevented.
You've got the authority then to revoke licenses to do various business activities, is that right?
In specific, public health law gives us specific authority, so we can revoke permits for any kind of establishment that serves food because we inspect them and we have to enforce sanitary codes. So we do have some of that authority. For non-food establishments, that power tends to sit with the regular code enforcement entities, and those are much more municipal. You know, towns, cities, villages have that authority.
Okay.
But again, none of us wants to take that approach. We want to partner with folks and educate and inform.
Indeed. And how do you want customers to respond when they are frustrated with, say, a business for not enforcing a mask policy?
Oh, that's a challenge because it would be much more powerful for a business to hear, not from us, but from their own clients, from the people that they exist to serve, that, look, I don't feel comfortable here. I might not be able to come back. I want to support local business, but if I don't feel like I can be safe, if I'm worried I'm going to be exposed by someone who's not following the mask mandate and then take the virus or some other germ home to my loved ones, I might not feel like I can come back and support your business. I think that would be much more effective than having us or the enforcement, the regular code enforcement officers reach out to the supervisors. And by the time it reaches us, it's been a day or two, by the time someone remembered to put in the report, by the time the report gets to us. So if folks could just, you know, politely state to a manager or even to the individual, hey, did you know that your mask is supposed to go up over your nose? Or I'm a little bit concerned that you're not wearing a mask. Can you help me understand why you're making that choice? You know, the mass collective would be quite effective to cause a response right in that moment. Mm-hmm. Of course, that requires folks to potentially confront someone else, and a lot of folks are not willing to do that. And so there's always the option of calling the 5555 number, the 753-5555 COVID hotline number, or submitting a formal complaint through the State Department of Health website.
Okay. And before I turn to the other guests, let me just follow up on one important point about what we do know. I think it's always valuable to ask what we do and don't know, what evidence we have. My understanding, Dr. Ballister Brown, is that masking is effective. It is not enough for us to decide not to physically distance. It's not enough for us to know that we will be perfectly kept safe from aerosolized viral particles. But it is also, I think there is enough evidence in a lot of different places, enough for us to know that it certainly beats nothing, and that if there were universal adoption, universal adoption would give us a big, big stride forward in keeping it contained, which is what I think is happening in this community.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Oh, that is absolutely true. You know, folks think that there's no evidence that they do anything. That is not the case. More and more studies are being published that are indicating that these non-pharmaceutical interventions, which is all we have right now until there's a vaccine, they are being effective. You know, certainly wearing a mask, washing your hands. These are not like super cool, technological, sexy interventions, but they work. And we've had anecdotal experiences even right here in Monroe County in, you know, a camp setting or in a daycare where the fact that someone who was asymptomatic, so they had COVID, but they were not showing symptoms yet, was wearing a mask, and none of their campers, none of their students have thus far, knock on wood and praise God, have none of them have turned positive for COVID-19, even though we know that index case was present around them, but they were wearing masks. And so these masks help. They're certainly better than nothing. And you're absolutely right. The higher the percentage of the population that adopts these protective measures, the better protected we all are.
I would like to hear from listeners on how your experience has been, especially in public or at stores and businesses. And if you've got questions about how this works or what the expectations are or procedures, it's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. It's 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. And to put one more point on what the Deputy Commissioner of Public Health was just saying about what we know about masking. You know, there have been cases in which, you know, someone who works directly with the public, essentially a frontline worker, I mean, for example, people cutting hair will be found to have had COVID. And, you know, they'll look at 150 people they interacted with or cut hair or did work on over a two-week span, and almost no one, as long as both people were wearing masks, is infected. Again, it doesn't mean it can't happen, but it is much more of a bulwark against that happening. And I do want to point out, listeners, if you have not heard the news today, it's jarring to hear that former presidential candidate Herman Cain died of COVID today. Herman Cain was 74 years old, and he was up for a pretty big job with the Fed, still very, very active. And in fact, his only public appearance that the New York Times has been able to note came 2 weeks before his diagnosis with COVID. He went to Donald Trump's campaign rally in Oklahoma. He sat next to the governor of Oklahoma, who has been diagnosed with COVID, and he did not wear a mask. He boasted on social media of not wearing masks and said that people are fed up and that he'd be going to the rally and that there would be no masks. Herman Cain died today, and no one wants to see that. And I'm not sitting here saying we know for sure that he got COVID at that rally. We don't know. And we may not ever know. And no one wants to see these kinds of results. I bring it up to say this is, it remains deadly serious. I know our rates are low, and the reason they're low is because of the work that we're doing and because of the kinds of things that Dr. Velez-DeBrown is bringing up with us here. That's why we have to keep taking it seriously. So Dr. Velez-DeBrown, did you want to weigh in on something there?
Just one other point. You know, folks think about what else could we possibly do? Could we substitute a face shield, for example, for the face covering mask over the nose and mouth? Again, something is better than nothing, but a face shield, which is a plastic sheet that kind of goes around your face, still tends to be open around the edges. And so when we're talking about an illness that is spread through respiratory droplets that can be in the air, you're going to breathe the air. It's going to come right under that face shield. Face shields are really meant to be a splash guard. So if I'm putting in some sort of a central line into a blood vessel where there might be a spray of blood, you know, that is what a face shield is meant to protect the wearer from. It's not meant to protect someone from droplets of, you know, respiratory droplets that are hanging around in the air.
Okay, very
so
good.
So healthcare workers who are doing aerosolizing procedures, yes, wear the face shield and the mask and the gloves and the gowns, but regular people walking around the grocery store, on buses, the face shield's not an adequate substitute for a face covering that's over both your nose and your mouth.
Very good. We're going to talk to Molly Hartley in a moment about the business perspective. I want to ask Dr. Michal Raz, who is an associate professor of clinical medicine at the University of Rochester Medical Center, for a little bit of perspective on not just masking, but when exemptions may be appropriate here. Our colleague Brett Dahlberg reported on this. And I said at the outset of the hour, Dr. Raz, that you know I talked to a friend who's a small business owner in Rochester, and I asked him recently, you know, how are people doing with masks? He said there was, you know, basically one incident in which somebody made a big show of not wearing a mask and claimed that they couldn't do it for medical reasons, and it was clear to the business owner that that was not true and that the person was essentially just not interested in complying. And he asked the person to leave. And he said it was frustrating to him that people would grandstand in that way and try to claim an exemption when there are people who may legitimately need it. How do we draw certain lines here? How do you see it, Dr. Rouse?
Yeah, it's a very complicated situation. And some of it is, you know, people who are well-intentioned and trying to do the best in their condition. And some of it are people who are blatantly abusing trust and blatantly abusing laws that are designed to protect individuals with disability in order to flaunt public health directives. And that's shameful. And it hurts our community and it hurts the struggle of individuals with disability. So there's a couple things at hand. There are very few medical conditions that are completely incompatible with masking. That means that exemptions should be rare. There are very few conditions that, honestly, you cannot absolutely wear a mask. And they're not really well-defined because people deal with disabilities in different ways. So not, you know, two people with the same disability might not have the same needs. Then the other question is what's the appropriate accommodation? And there's absolutely no requirement that the accommodation for an individual with a disability who cannot tolerate a mask be an exemption from masking. An appropriate accommodation could be, you know, wait outside and I'll bring you whatever you need from the store, or curbside service, delivery. If you're working if you have a job that requires a mask, because when you come into your workplace, then you could find an accommodation that would be working remotely, working from home, working in a non-public facing situation. So there's this idea that mask exemption is the only accommodation for a disability, and that's absolutely not correct. And the business owner is not under any obligation to provide this specific accommodation. They should accommodate individual disabilities. They should find a way that is responsive to the individual's needs and to public health concerns. So the individual in question, the business owner, could have said, you know, you'll wait outside, I'll address your needs in a different way.
Fair enough. And, you know, Dr. Rouse, you're not only a medical doctor, but you're a professor of history and health policy. And I'm just curious to know, contextually, do we have a sense if this level of opposition, I don't want to overstate it. I mean, I think the reason, as Dr. Bellis DeBrown says, is we're doing pretty well as a community, is we're getting on board and we're doing what we have to do. But there has been shows of opposition. We've got, you know, governors like the governor of Georgia saying he's going to block mask orders. Do you have this happening in other countries that we're aware of at this level?
No. That's a short answer. No. Masking is difficult. It's a burden. It's uncomfortable. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, all of us in public health, we should be responsive to that, empathetic to that. You know, it's not easy. And other countries have been struggling with enforcement in different ways. But it hasn't been such a politicized issue in any other country apart from here in the United States. And we do have a history of this. You know, in 1918, when San Francisco tried to enforce mask ordinance, you know, over 1,000 people were arrested for mask violations or for being mask slackers, which was a term used at the time. But usually, those folks had a mask in their pocket, a mask under their chin. It was more like they didn't completely comply with the requirement. Not that they were flaunting, that they refused to do it as a political stance. And here it becomes even more complicated because people are relying on the protections of the ADA in order to further their misguided political belief that they don't need to wear a mask because it's an infringement on their rights or liberties. So that's really the complicated issue here with the exemptions that adds a layer of suspicion, which is really unfair for individuals who are struggling with disabilities. And there are many individuals with disabilities who are complying with a mask requirement despite significant hardship. And in contrast, you have folks who are standing there and screaming at Costco stores or whatever the next video is going to be, saying, you know, I can't mask because I have asthma. And as an aside, the National Professional Organization that deals with asthma does not think that asthma is a reason for exemptions from mask.
Interesting. Okay. On the subject of what happens in these businesses, let me grab a phone call from Sue in Fairport. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi. I recently shopped in a branch of a very, very large grocery store chain in our city and elsewhere along the East Coast. And I noticed that there were people in the store, shoppers without masks. I noticed that one of the clerks at the cash register had the mask below her nose. I filled out a comment card, and I had a call from Wegmans, and they explained to me that when they see someone without a mask, they offer one. They do not ask the person to leave the store or confront them any further. And their reason being, understandable, is concern for the safety of their employees. But still, this grocery store chain is not enforcing the rule about wearing a mask in a place like that. And it's of concern. If a large chain like that isn't doing it, it makes me think that there's probably many others that are not as well.
Yeah, Sue, thank you. And so let's do this. I suspect all three of our guests will have something to say about what businesses should be doing. I will start specifically, though, with Sue's comment. Sue's comments about Wegmans. Wegmans is not represented on this program today. We already have a phone call from a listener named Sean who just left a comment off air. He said he had issues with people not wearing masks in Wegmans, and a security guard there said they're not enforcing a mask policy because it's a lawsuit risk and also potentially a HIPAA violation. I have probably gotten emails about Wegmans just about every day for the last several weeks. So let me say this. We haven't reached out to Wegmans directly, at least the program hasn't, but this is an open invitation. Wegmans, please come on the show and clear something up, because sometimes it takes just a few high-profile incidents and all of a sudden, reputationally, something is sort of out of whack. Maybe it's blown out of proportion. But there is real momentum right now in this community to the community concluding that Wegmans is just not serious enough about this. And that's a problem, because Wegmans matters. And Wegmans, I'm not going to defend you, and I'm not going to condemn you. I'm going to say this is not easy. We're all doing our best to figure out how to enforce this as best we can. But that perception is now getting some serious velocity. And so what do we do about that? So Dr. Velez de Brun, how often do you hear complaints about Wegmans?
Oh, goodness. I would have to get back to you on that. I'm so sorry. I don't have those numbers right off the top of my head.
It can't be zero.
I will say we've gotten, it might not be zero. I know the ones that come to mind for me have been smaller businesses, but okay. I actually don't know the answer to that question. I'm so sorry.
Okay, and that's fine. And again, it's not to shame any one business, because I do think that there has to be sort of a grace period with businesses getting up to speed on what are the rights of customers? What are the expectations? What are their obligations? How do they handle it specifically, carefully? So, Dr. Velez de Brun, let's talk about some of the things that people like Sue, who said that she left a comment card and the marketing department got back to her and said they choose not to confront people about the mask policy. In other words, they've got this policy, they expect you to wear it, but if you don't, they're not going to approach you in the store. Is that enough?
That is a really hard question to answer, because certainly the governor in many of his press conferences has said that enforcement is important and needs to be done. But then there are cases of, you know, security guards in other states being shot and killed by angry, irate people because they're trying to do their job and enforce the mask wearing mandate. I don't think any employer wants to have an incident like that occur. And so it is really, really challenging, and it's a hard line to a balance to walk. And we don't have any firm guidance from coming through law enforcement, coming through, you know, State Department of Health about how exactly that can be done.
I also think, Dr. Velez de Brun, that someone like Sean, who called the program, I'm not going to question his account of what happened at one of the Wegmans branches. I will just say, if you talk to a security guard at Wegmans, that's probably not the right. Well. Look, you got to talk to somebody in the moment. I get it. But that may not be perfectly representative of company policy. So I'm not sitting here saying that Sean's account's wrong, but I'm also not saying that, well, the security guard at one of the branches told Sean that they don't enforce policy because it's a lawsuit risk and a HIPAA violation, that's therefore Wegmans policy. It might not be Wegmans policy. That might not be communicated properly. So is there a possible HIPAA violation? Is there a lawsuit risk that stores should be concerned about?
I'm being a medical doctor, I can't speak to the legal aspects of it. Certainly, the HIPAA violation, you know, in an employee at the county who had some concern would be required to submit documentation to our own HR department. And so I don't know the legalities of requiring someone out in the community to carry around a letter from their physician or someone that was had the degree and credentials to make this determination and then have to prove it in order to remain in a business. Certainly privately owned businesses, as you've already mentioned, have the right to make different accommodations than what the customer themselves prefers.
Okay.
I'll jump in and say that HIPAA has nothing to do with this. So HIPAA does not apply to grocery shopping. So there is absolutely no concern here for any HIPAA violation. Now, the question is, I mean, if somebody has a disability, do they need to show documentation to walk into the grocery store? No, they shouldn't need to. But as we said, that shouldn't be the only accommodation. So if the grocery store policy is that there's no unmasked individuals shopping, then regardless of the reason that you're unmasked, you need to find a different solution. And Wegmans does offer delivery, so that's a pretty easy accommodation.
Yeah, I think
that's curbside pickup.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Let me bring in Molly Hartley, the co-owner of Scratch Bake Shop, for kind of a small business perspective here, because, you know, Molly, I'm thinking about, people I know who work in Wegmans, and everybody has seen the viral videos. They've seen the dude in Florida who was threatening an older woman and looked like he was about to erupt on her because she told him to wear a mask. People don't want to be in that spot. It's a very, very hard spot. I can understand emotionally in a moment why you might look the other way if you've got a customer walking through who's not wearing a mask. At the same time, it sounds to me like you've made a decision about what you're going to do. What do you do at Scratch? What's the plan?
Yeah, absolutely. So before we decided to reopen the shop, we were doing just strictly curbside pickup and delivery for about 3.5 months. We really took our time when we decided to reopen. We did a lot of research. We did a lot of deep cleaning and sanitizing, made sure we bought the proper sanitizing and all of the hand sanitizer that we could put out right out when people walk in. We also were, the city of Rochester went around and delivered signs and also free face masks. They gave us a box of 100 masks that they said we could use them for our customers, our employees. So we put those signs on our door, and we have the masks available for customers who forget theirs or don't have one and try to come in without one. We are enforcing a strict wearing a mask policy. The first thing we do is we want to make sure that everyone is safe, not only our customers, but our employees. So our employees and our customers, safety comes first. And I don't think that's really asking for a lot. Our shop is particularly small, so you can't really socially distance when you come into our shop. It's really hard to stay 6 feet apart from someone. When we actually had someone come in without a mask last week, this customer is a regular of ours, and we know that this person particularly does not have a disability that would prohibit him from wearing a mask. And he was very angry and very rude and upset. A customer that was in the shop did get this on video, and it shook all of us up a lot. It was very hard mentally and emotionally on all of us. It's taken a lot for us to even stay open doing curbside. But to reopen the shop, which we did a few weeks ago, has been just very emotionally taxing on all of our employees. And I know that we're living in really, really unprecedented times right now. Everything is very unknown. I think that there's a lot of fear and anxiety in many people. So I think that having more empathy, having more awareness and mindfulness, no matter where you go, whether you're going to the grocery store or into a small business somewhere, just being mindful. Of course, there are circumstances where people will forget their mask. I do it all the time.
Yeah, me too.
And that's why we have these masks that the city gave us. They're available.
I was halfway down the street the other day on my way over to Fuego Coffee, and I was like, oh, my gosh, the mask is in the car.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
And then I went back, you know, because I'm so used to, like, just having it around my neck, around my ears, and you almost start to feel naked without it. And then for some reason you just remembered I didn't have it. So I would not have even thought of going in there without it. And so let me also ask you, Molly, I'm with you on the empathy and trying to show grace, et cetera. I'm with you there. When it comes to businesses that are maybe nervous about offending a customer who's in a store or in a place of business not wearing a mask, I think it's probably also important to realize that if you're afraid of offending that customer by enforcing a masking rule, you may inadvertently be offending all of the other customers who are wearing masks who expect you to enforce that rule.
Oh, absolutely. I think that also we live in a day and age that's changing. I think that the older generation might think that the customer is always right. But I've always had a very strict policy that the customer is not always right. There are very rude and angry people. Working with the general public is not an easy thing. And I've always trained my employees to, you know, stand your ground, and if you can't do it, come and get me and I'll do it for you. It's really hard to have these in-person confrontations. You know, you have to know how to handle your anxiety, and when this happens, you know, you have to have steps in place for what to say, mm-hmm. what to do. It's okay to tell someone, you can't be in the shop right now, you need to leave, you know, we will deny you service, and stand your ground. And we might lose a customer or two here or there, but really our general public that are coming into the shop every day, they've been amazing. Like, the community in Rochester has been extremely supportive and amazing. I posted about this on social media because we have a pretty big social media following, so I wanted to just make everyone aware who, like, our regular customers that do come in, that this happened and that this is not okay. And it was very eye-opening, a lot of the feedback we got. I was very surprised. Most of it was in support of us, saying thank you for protecting your customers and your staff and putting everyone first and everyone's safety first. But there was also people who started accusing us of being discriminating towards people with disabilities who can't wear masks. So my answer to those people were that we do offer curbside delivery. So if you are someone who feels like you cannot wear a mask because you have a disability, we will absolutely bring anything out to your car. And I also want to remind people that, like, we are a luxury business. You come in for a baked good. It's not worth risking someone's life. And do we know for sure that the masks are 100% effective? No. Do we know anything for sure right now? It's very hard to know what's right and what's wrong. But why would you want to take that chance? I would always err on the side of better safe than sorry, than, you know, potentially risking someone's life.
Yeah.
It really hit home for me that we were accused of the discrimination with someone with a disability because my brother has always lived with a disability, and he's always used a wheelchair. So I'm very, very aware of people's rights who have disabilities, and I am very, very flexible. Everyone at Scratch goes above and beyond to make sure that our customers are treated with respect. And in turn, our employees and the staff here should be treated with that same respect and kindness.
Yeah, that's great. One more point, and then we're going to turn it over to your phone calls the rest of the way here. And I want to direct this to Dr. Roz, because I've got a listener online saying, you know, at the outset of the hour, Evan, you talked about a friend of yours who owns a small business, and the only opposition on masking was someone who was making up a disability. How do you know they were making it up? The short answer to that is the conversation sounded like this. The person wasn't wearing a mask. My friend asked them to wear a mask. They said, oh, come on. He said, nope, that's the rule. You got to wear a mask. And he said, okay, fine. Well, guess what? I've got a disability. How's that? And he said, that's not enough for me. I need you to wear a mask. And so I'm not saying it's impossible, but the tenor of that conversation to me says, I'm going to try to exploit some kind of a loophole. And that is not okay. What should our expectations be, Dr. Roz, you know, for small businesses who have to make those calls in a moment like that?
Yeah, that's really tough. And I'm going to put a reminder out there that the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, does not protect individuals without disabilities. So if you don't have a disability and you're claiming one, then you're doing something that's not legal. And you don't have any protections here. So just kind of putting that out there. So for small business owners, and I agree with what Molly's saying, that an empathetic approach is best, that enforcement is important, but it's very hard to do. And that handing out masks in a place where people don't have masks is probably the best answer. But if you see somebody who has a disability, then I think working with them to find a solution. I think Molly's policy of bringing out the cake to the curbside is a perfectly adequate accommodation, which doesn't put herself and her workers and her customers at risk. So that would be my approach. It's finding an accommodation that is not the danger to public health.
That's great. Just got an email from a listener in Brussels, Belgium. Eleni says, was there pushback when laws to wear shoes and shirts in shops came into effect? I doubt it. Thank you. With kind regards, I'm a Rochester native living in Brussels, Belgium, and I love listening to your show. Thank you, Eleni. I love having listeners across the world listen on the WXXI mobile app. That is wonderful news. Our guests include Dr. Michal Raz, who you just heard, who is a professor of history and health policy at the University of Rochester and a medical doctor, of course. Molly Hartley, co-owner of Scratch Bake Shop. Dr. Maria Elena Velez de Brown is the Monroe County Deputy Commissioner of Public Health. Your phone calls after our only break. Coming up in our second hour, sex during the pandemic. We're talking about the way the pandemic has impacted relationships for parents, dating lives, rules and expectation, etiquette for dating. A lot has been impacted in just a few months, and the pandemic isn't going away anytime soon. So what is the impact on love, relationships, dating, and more? We'll talk about it next hour. This is Connections. Eric in Ovid next on the phone. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi. I just had a comment about what was discussed earlier. Sorry, there might be a siren in the background. I've been living in Singapore for the last 3 years, and actually I just relocated back to the U.S. this month. And so I got to see how they rolled out the COVID protocols over in Singapore. And I can say that to back up what was said earlier, there was no issue about getting people to comply with mask orders. Young, old, even the extremely elderly, which many people over here might say, well, it's difficult to breathe. Everybody wore the mask. You might see the occasional mask slipping below someone's nose, but someone would say, oh, your mask is slipping. Come on, you know, let me help you pick it up. And in fact, there was one case where someone, a Singaporean, repeatedly refused to wear the mask, and there was a whole viral video about the person being confrontational about wearing it and how she didn't want to wear it. And in that video, she said, I don't have to wear it. I'm a sovereign citizen. And that, you know, the whole country was kind of like, what is a sovereign citizen? So the media for days would go on and explain, okay, the sovereign citizen movement began in the U.S., where people believe that they're above the law and they don't have to comply with the law. So that was an awkward few days where I had to field a lot of questions from my colleagues who were like, wow, is this very common in the U.S.? And, well, sadly, yes. So, yeah, that was my comment.
Eric, thank you for the phone call. Dr. Raz, that lines up with what you were telling us earlier.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, boy. Eric, thank you. And, again,
and if I could...
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Sorry, if I could just chime in. You know, we also have a history of trying to manipulate certain things to get our individual preferences. So as Dr. Ross said, HIPAA does not apply in situations that are not a medical establishment. So HIPAA requires healthcare providers to protect your personal health information when, you know, your PCP, your primary care physician, talks to a specialist, or when your doctor calls the Department of Public Health. We are bound under HIPAA as healthcare providers. Nobody else is. This is a law specifically related to the healthcare setting. So people who are going to go into shops or try to make excuses claiming HIPAA, A, don't understand the law, and exactly as Dr. Rose said, it doesn't apply in those non-medical settings.
Okay.
So business owners, be empowered. You don't have to. Go ahead.
Oh, I was saying, jumping in that. So HIPAA doesn't apply, and then the ADA doesn't apply if you don't have a disability. So these are two laws that don't apply for individuals who don't want to wear a mask and do not have a qualifying disability.
Okay. I'm going to take two calls in succession. They're making similar points. Bob and Brighton first. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, hi. I just noticed that one approach when we were thinking like the Wegman's dilemma, how does an employee approach, or should they approach somebody not wearing a mask? I know at Walmart, they seem to have a pretty good approach. You have a kind of a line that you have to go through, and it says, you know, as a private establishment, we require you to wear a mask. And there's a security guard there. And if you have a mask on, you can get in. And if you don't have a mask on, you can't get in. So the screening is done at the very beginning, and it seems to have worked well the couple times I've been there. I mean, it doesn't prevent the possibility of someone taking off a mask, but it's not an employee that's to find people. And then if they're not wearing a mask, because they actually don't have one with them, then they're just not let in at the beginning. And I don't know. It seems like that might be one approach.
Okay. Bob, thank you. And Fred in Rochester, kind of a similar thread. Go ahead, Fred.
Yeah, Wegmans has armed, or at least in Gates, they have armed police, Gates police officers at the door, and they're not enforcing it either. So the police department's not enforcing a state law. And I called corporate, Wegmans corporate, and they said, no, we're not enforcing it because it's a threat to our employees. I said, well, that's all well and good, but you've got an armed cop in the door. He could be stopping people. You know, you can't run chase them down if they take it off in the store. But, you know, coming in the door, like the gentleman said about Wegmans, I mean, Walmart, you know, they could do the same.
Yeah.
And I want to throw out kudos to Molly at Scratch Bakery because I love her vegan options. And I will, and as a older person with asthma and respiratory issues, I can't afford the COVID. So thank you for your enforcing it. And you'll be seeing me probably Sunday morning with a vegan donut.
Donut Sunday.
Thank you, Fred.
So that means so much to us.
That probably does mean a lot, Molly. I mean, there's somebody who loves what you're making at Scratch Bake Shop, but also appreciates you for the policy. And I think, you know, on the flip side, you know, Fred and Bob are concerned about, you know, again, the Wegmans response. Let me say again, I don't know that Wegmans is officially saying we don't enforce the mask policy because we have to protect the health of our workers. I do understand it. It can be uncomfortable, but you also have to protect the health of everybody. That's what masking is about. So, you know, some sort of concern about a violent confrontation, I get it. Nobody wants that. But the virus is not benign. So if that is Wegmans' policy, I'd like it better explained by Wegmans. I'm not saying it definitely is, and I'm trying to give myself that out, and frankly, the company, because we're all trying to learn here. On the other side of that, before we get to our guest to respond, Lisa in Rochester has a different view of it. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hi. I'd like to preface this by saying that I think everyone should wear a mask,
mm-hmm.
and I'm immunosuppressed, and so I, you know, have concerns about people getting COVID. But I'm also concerned about, you know, everybody acting like the police and being self-righteous and being in everybody else's business. I'd like to say that, you know, I think part of wearing the mask is to, to not giving someone the virus in case you're a carrier. But it also prevents you from getting the virus if someone coughs on you. Correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Right? So if you're in a store and someone's not wearing a mask, you stay 6 feet away and you're wearing a mask and you're protecting yourself. So if someone's not wearing a mask, stay away, keep 6 feet away, and mind your own business. That's how I feel as an immunosuppressed person. So, you know, like for people all around America for attacking people who are not wearing a mask, mind your own business. Don't be so self-righteous. Don't go attacking them. You know, you're taking your precautions. You're staying 6 feet away. You're wearing a mask and you're protecting yourself. You know, I think that people, you know, going around and attacking other people and becoming, the police, I don't think that's a good way to go.
Well, before I ask our guests what they think, Lisa, how about this? What if I were to say to somebody who wasn't wearing a mask at a store, what if I were to go up and just very congenially say, hey, I notice you're not wearing a mask. If I've got an extra one, can I grab you one? Can I help you out? And see what they say about that. Maybe they'll tell me, look, I can't wear one. And I'll say, oh, cool, very good. I wish you well. I mean, is that, you know, also too in people's business?
Yeah, they know they're not wearing a mask. They have their reasons, whether it's for medical reasons, for political reasons, for whatever reason. You know, we're all grown-ups. They know they're not wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
Stay 6 feet away, wear your mask, and mind your own business.
Okay.
You know, I know that it's a big, you know, social conscious political thing, but, everyone, you know, we have this whole cancel culture thing and everybody wants to wear a mask and everybody's, you know, all righteous about it. You know, just keep 6 feet away, wear a mask and mind your own business. That's how I feel.
All right, Lisa, I do appreciate that. And I understand that people can be a little bit grandstandy or virtue signally sometimes with stuff. I probably can myself. I don't think asking someone gently and kindly if they need an extra mask at a store is a political thing. That's just not how I view this. And I think if we just allow that to become a political thing, masks should not be political. I think just the statement that they're making a political statement, I don't accept that. We can't let this become political, because that's what's going to keep people dying at higher rates in this country, unless I'm seeing it wrong. Dr. Raz, I'll start with you. What do you think?
Yeah, I know, absolutely. And masks are not political. Public health is not political. And in some cases, mind your own business is a good approach. For instance, if you're outside and you can, you know, you can definitely easily distance yourself from someone else. We our knowledge about COVID is growing and how it's spread, but we do know that circulation of air, aerosols inside a closed space is an important factor in how this disease is spread. So, you know, 6 feet apart in a place that's closed doesn't offer the same protection. So I don't think that the remedy is only, you know, minding your own business. Now, the question is whether private citizens should be the one enforcing policies. No, I don't think so. But there's a problem that policies are not being enforced by the guard at the door or by a corporate or by whatever it is not enforcing the policy. And then individuals actually feel threatened by somebody who is unmasked in a public closed space.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a health threat for them, and it could be a health threat for the workers at this at the store, which we know are at higher risk for exposure to this virus.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you know, there are situations in which I would absolutely mind my own business. I would never approach somebody in an open space. But when you're in a closed space, especially if you're going to, for instance, Molly's shop, which is small, and somebody is not masked, then they're definitely exposing the workers there. And once that individual leaves, the aerosol he spread in that shop stays. So, you know, in that case, minding your own business would not be an adequate response.
Yeah, and again, I'll just say, Lisa, another listener points out that Lisa seems to think that wearing a mask protects the wearer. It's meant to protect others. So when people are saying, you know, don't bother me, let me do it, let me not wear a mask, mind your own business, what you're saying is, let me jeopardize the health of the other people in this space. You know, it's not like you're saying I'm not going to wear a seatbelt. It's very different than that. And I do think, I do agree with Lisa's point, Dr. Velez de Brown, that, you know, maybe just instantly launching into a tirade against somebody is not wise and is not fair.
Sure.
I think inquiring gently is a very different thing. How do you feel about it?
It is. And you're absolutely right. You know, we wear the masks to trap our own respiratory droplets from getting out. So if we were all actually in your studio, which we're not, I would be wearing a mask so that if I have COVID-19 and I don't know it yet and I'm not showing symptoms, then any of my respiratory droplets would get caught in my own mask and far fewer of them would get out in the world to potentially land in your eyes and your nose and potentially infect you. But we do have precedent in this country for making public policy that protects the larger community, even if an individual feels like their rights are infringed. For example, if someone has an active case of tuberculosis and they're breathing out this bacterium that can make people sick, we have the public health law and authority to mandate that that person take treatment, because we as a society have decided that we have the right to breathe air that's not going to potentially kill somebody. COVID-19 is very new, and sure, there's a lot that we don't know, but we do know that universal masking is an effective method of diminishing the numbers of cases that we get. The fewer cases we have, the fewer people will get sick enough to need to go into the hospital, need to get on an ICU, on a ventilator, and the fewer number of people that will die. So the people say we don't know anything. Well, that's not true. We're actually developing the evidence base now, and there's you know, a principle called the precautionary principle that states we should definitely act at times without definitive 100% ironclad, double blind, you know, randomized controlled trials. You know, the extreme example is nobody's going to run a randomized controlled trial on wearing a parachute if you're jumping out of an airplane. It doesn't mean you don't wear the parachute. When we have building evidence that it works from other countries, even from within our own country, it costs so little for each of us to protect each other, and we're not going to be able to beat this COVID-19 without everyone working together.
Well, and Molly, what do you think about this idea of mind your own business? I have to be honest, Molly, when I see people in Wegmans or in a store like Scratch not wearing a mask, I do not approach them gently and say, oh, hey, I noticed you're not wearing a mask. Can I help you find one? I basically just get the heck away from them. I don't talk to them at all. I just get out of there.
Exactly. It's disheartening to hear this is happening at Wegmans, because I go to Wegmans weekly for a lot of the stuff we need for the shop, and I haven't seen anyone without a mask on. I think if that's happening, that Wegmans needs to do a better job at enforcing the mask wearing policy. I think that that's absolutely absurd. If I saw someone in Wegmans that didn't have a mask on, I would get as far away from them as possible. I might even probably get anxiety and want to leave the store completely. That hasn't happened to me yet. I haven't personally been going to a lot of places other than Wegmans and work, and then, you know, being outside, because I don't want to risk it. I don't want to risk the life of anyone that I come into contact with, or my own life. So I think that businesses in general need to do a better job. A lot of small businesses, specifically on Park Ave, need to do a much better job with enforcing distancing and masks. I've seen a lot of posts on social media, businesses on Park Ave that are, there are a lot of people and they are not 6 feet apart. Mm. And it's really scary. It's scary. And I even, a friend of mine posted on Facebook the other day, oh, well, it's only 1% of the population that have died or that are dying. Like, that is insane. People are dying. No one's life, not even one life, should be put at risk like this. And I really wish that businesses were taking this more seriously and enforcing it. I have to do extra work right now myself, just to make sure that all of these policies are being followed by our staff, our customers, and also just to make sure that everybody's okay. And, you know, I'm a one person. This is a small business. And if Wegmans can't handle it, I don't know. It's scary to think. They have a lot of employees. They should be putting more people, more security in the stores.
Well, let me just close the hour by saying, you know, Wegmans took some heat from listeners today. Wegmans opened door to come talk about this and to correct anything that listeners might have gotten wrong, or if I was repeating something wrong, because I know the hard work that you're doing to try to keep people safe. But we all have to do this together. So that's an open invitation to Wegmans. And Molly, the co-owner of Scratch Bake Shop, thanks for what you're doing. Thanks for making time for the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Michal Raz, thank you for the expertise and for your perspective today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Dr. Maria Elena Velez de Brown from Monroe County, the Deputy Commissioner of Public Health, thank you for what you're doing as well.
Always a pleasure.
We are on a good track, community. Your masks look great. More connections coming up.